জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে, গোপীজন ভোলাভ গিরিভর ধরে, গোপীজন ভোলাভ গিরিভর ধরে, যশোদ নন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যশোদ নন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যমুনা তীর বনচারি, যমুনা তীর বনচারি, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে, গোপীজন ভোলাভ গিরিভর ধরে, জয়া গোপীজন ভোলাভ গিরিভর ধরে, যশোদ নন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যশোদ নন্দন ব্রজ জন রঞ্জন, যমুনা তীর বনচারি, যমুনা তীর বনচারি, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে,
জয়ং বিষ্ণুপাদ পরমহংস পরিব্রাজকাচার্য আশুতোতর শত শ্রীমদ ডিভাইন গ্রেস এসি ভক্তি বেদান্ত স্বামী শ্রীল প্রভুপাদ কি, জয়ং বিষ্ণুপাদ পরমহংস পরিব্রাজকাচার্য আশুতোতর শত শ্রীমদ ডিভাইন গ্রেস ভক্তি সিদ্ধান্ত সরস্বতী গোস্বামী মহারাজ শ্রীল প্রভুপাদ কি, অনন্ত কোটি বৈষ্ণব বৃন্দ কি, ইসকন ফাউন্ডার আচার্য শ্রীল প্রভুপাদ কি, গ্রন্থরাশিমম ভাগবতং কি, Dai Gaur Primanam. O glories to the Ascend Bodhavati. O glories to the Ascend Bodhavati. O glories to the Ascend Bodhavati. O glories to Shishu Guru and Shri Gaurangha.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing the Elephant Gajendra's Crisis, Canto 8, Chapter 2, Text 32. So we'll be chanting responsibly, Text 32. Namami me gnata asuram gaja. Ta karinya prabhavansi muchitam. Gahena pasena vidatura vito. Yaham chatam yami param parayanam. Namami me gnatya utaram gaja. Kuta karinya prabhavanti mochitum. Jahena pashena vidatur abrito. Yaham cha tam yanti param parayanam. Namami me gnatya aturam gaja. Kuta karinya prabhavanti mochitum. Gahena pashena vidatur avrito. Yaham chatam yami param parayanam. Namami me gnataya aturam gaja. Kuta karinya prabhavansi mochitum. Gahena pashena vidatura vito. Yaham chatam yami param gajayanam. Namami me gnataya aturam gaja. Kuta karinya prabhavanti mochitum. Gahena pashena vidatura vito. Yaham chatam yami param parayanam. Namami me gnataya aturam gaja. Kuta karinya prabhavansi mochitum. Dahena pashena vidatura vito. Yaham chatam yami param parayanam. Namami me gnataya aturam gaja. Kuta karinya prabhavansi mochitum. Na pashena vidatura vito. Yaham chatam yami Namami me kyataya tsuram kaja kuta karinya prabhavanti mochitum dahena pashena vidatsura pito yaham chasam yaham param parayanam. Word, I'll just offer my obeisances. Namo Vijna Prabhaya Krishna Prasaya Vitale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamuni Mr. Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachani Nidhi Sinyavadi Pashita Deshatayani Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adhirita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakti Vinodi Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, word for word. Na, not. Mam, me, me, or these, Nyatiya, friends and relatives. The other elephants. Aturam, in my distress. Gaja, the elephants. Kuta, how? Karinya, my wife. Prabhavanti, are able, Mochitsum, to deliver from this dangerous position. Rahena, by the crocodile. Pasena, by the network of ropes, Vidatsu, of providence, Abrita, captured, Api, although I am in such a position, Aham, I, Cha, also, Tam, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yami, take shelter of, Param, who is transcendental, Parayanam, who is the shelter of even the exalted demigods like Brahma and Shiva. Translation. The other elephants, who are my friends and relatives, could not rescue me from this danger. What then to speak of my wives? They cannot do anything. It is by the will of providence that I have been attacked by the crocodile, and therefore I shall seek shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always the shelter of everyone, even of great personalities. The material world is described as padam padam yad vipadam, which means that at every step there is danger. A fool wrongly thinks that he is happy in this material world, but in fact he is not. For one who thinks that way is only illusioned. At every step, at every moment, there is danger. In modern civilization, one thinks that if he has a nice home and a nice car, his life is perfect. In the Western countries, especially in America, it is very nice to possess a good car. But as soon as one is on the road, there is danger because at any moment an accident may take place and one will be killed. The record actually shows that so many people die in such accidents. Therefore, if we actually think that this material world is a very happy place, this is our ignorance. Real knowledge is that this material world is full of danger. We may struggle for existence, as far as our intelligence allows, and may try to take care of ourselves, but unless the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, ultimately saves us from danger, our attempts will be useless. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says, Balasya neha sharanam pitarao nishimha. Nartasya chagadam udarvati majato now. Tapasya tat pratividirya vanyase shastas. Tabat vipo tanubritam tvad upekshitanam. It's from the Bhagavatam 7.9.19. We may invent so many ways to be happy or to counteract the danger of the material world, but unless our attempts are sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they will never make us happy. Those who try to be happy without taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are mudas, rascals. Namam duskritina muda papadyante narada nama. Those who are the lowest of men refuse to take to Krishna consciousness because they think they will be able to protect themselves without Krishna's care. This is their mistake. The decision of the king of the elephants, Gajendra, was correct. In such a dangerous position, he sought shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in these particular words said by Gajendra, I found myself looking at the word that he used, will. And so will is that power of making a reasoned decision or reasoned choice. And over here, Gajendra, he attributes his situation that have been attacked by the crocodile as the will or the choice being made by nature. So he then expands his thought process and he reasons that since this situation is due to nature, who's under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, he'll then take shelter of that very same Supreme Personality of Godhead. So just by looking at that simple reasoning that's clear from his words in this verse, he's revealing that he's got the quality of intelligence. And that quality of intelligence that's revealed by Gajendra's reasoning is intelligence as it's defined by Srila Prabhupada in that listing of the qualities that are created by Krishna in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the fifth verse. So this is how Srila Prabhupada defines intelligence. It's the power to analyze things in their proper perspective. So, so this is the particular intelligence that Gajendra is displaying. So by his reasoning, he concludes he's going to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Gajendra is also revealing that he has some knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It comes through in the particular words that he uses, because he states He is the shelter of everyone, even of great personalities. So Gajendra's particular intelligence, where he's analyzing things in their proper perspective, is that he's understanding. He can't save himself. There's this danger. He's going to be killed. And the best he can do, because he's so fearful, it was mentioned in a previous verse, he's really fearful of being killed. The best thing he can do dealing with that fear is to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because there he's going to receive some shielding from this fear that he's experiencing. So Srila Prabhupada, there's this one particular purport where he's dealing with this point of looking for the shelter. So he says that one need only seek the shelter or the shade of the Lord's lotus feet, so that one is freed from all material disturbances. Or even if one is experiencing a very deep sorrow or some kind of distress, that disturbance is going to be subdued. So this is coming from this particular idea is coming from a purport in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 6th canto in the 9th chapter, 24th verse. Srila Prabhupada uses a simile. It's exactly or just like when one comes under the shade of a huge tree, when there's the heat of the scorching sun, which will be coming up very soon, and immediately, as soon as one comes under the shade of a very large tree, that's intensity of the sun, that heat, that discomfort one is experiencing, immediately it becomes less severe. So that's the simile Srila Prabhupada's using to make this comparison of how it is that a distress, sorrow, material disturbance, all of it becomes subdued when one takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. So now the interesting thing is that this happens even without one asking for relief. So the minute one's mind moves to the lotus feet of Krishna, that shelter happens there. The disturbance is subdued. Now, now it's kind of interesting that Gajendra is not even having to ask for relief. Because here he is, he's in this elephant body. And he's taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So his decision is being based on a particular discrimination, and this applies to anybody who turns their mind to the lotus feet of Krishna. They actually have to, it has to come from a place where a particular distinction has been made, and that distinction has to do with the particular kind of happiness one is looking for, or the particular relief one is looking for. So in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada's highlighting one particular idea of happiness. And that is this idea of happiness of the particular shelter, physical shelter one's going to have, a house, or the particular conveyance in which one's going to move one's body from place to place, a car. So these are particular ideas of happiness. Now, in many ways, a house, a car, they end results. And that end result involves a lot of effort. So, for instance, I'm in a position where I have to consider a future nice home. So there's so many steps involved to get there. First, the previous home has to get all kinds of little cosmetic touches to make it attractive to a potential buyer. After that, there's a huge amount of research that has to be done for, you know, the correct property that has the correct number of rooms, that's the correct distance from the temple, that also somehow falls into a low crime area, because if you look at a map of this area, there's a lot of orange, which is moderate crime, and here and there, there's little patches of red, which is high crime, and occasionally there's a little green patch of low crime. So you kind of have to find a spot somewhere in between the moderate crime, the high crime, and that little patch that's going to be the low crime. So somehow or other. So there's all this effort that's going to be involved just to find a nice home. So so you can say that happiness, like in this latter case, describing this end result kind of happiness, there's a particular danger that can happen. And that particular danger, as one's working towards the fulfillment of that idea, is that one gets very attracted to one's own efforts, like the effort that's going into doing this, the effort that's going into that. So that there's a lot of attraction for that. So that's the danger. And versus remembering to be attracted to the Supreme Lord. So now there's a second kind of happiness, and that's spiritual happiness. So the source of that spiritual happiness is the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. It's only one source. So we find Uddhava, and I'm looking at Uddhava because he has some fantastic things to say on this topic. He looks or examines the categories of persons who happily take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. This is a particular category of persons. That category of persons, according to Uddhava, they feel fortunate and they feel favored by circumstance. And he gives them a particular name. That category of persons he calls swan-like men. So the reason they're swan-like men is that they've located the very source of spiritual happiness, the lotus feet of Krishna. So now Uddhava explains there's another category of persons. And that category of persons cannot appreciate the great advantage of obediently surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Persons cannot see the great advantage. And also there's not the obedience to do so. So Uddhava puts it this way, these are his words. Those who take pride in their accomplishments in yoga and karma fail to take shelter and are defeated by your illusory energy. And this is from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the 29th chapter, 3rd verse. So, some persons are always going to be much more attracted to their own efforts, to achieve their own particular kind of happiness versus those who appreciate taking the, advantage of obediently surrendering to the lotus feet of Krishna. So always there's going to be those two categories of persons. So now, if one looks at this particular statement of Uddhava, that there are persons that are falling into that category of not being able to take advantage of obediently surrendering to the lotus feet of Krishna, that they're very much proud of their accomplishment in karma. So this is the definition that Krishna gives about the accomplishment in karma. This is how Krishna describes it. It's action pertaining to the development of the material body of the living entity, which is called karma or fruit of activity. So that's the definition. It's related to activities related to the material body. Get that in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 3rd verse. Now, this development of the material body, those accomplishments in karma, they're colored by material consciousness, because that's what's fueling everything, the material consciousness. So in material consciousness, there's a particular position that a person takes. And that position that the person is taking is trying to be a lord or a mistress of matter. That's the position. So we just, in the previous verse, we heard a description of Gajendra that illustrates this position. Like a human being, this is the previous verse, who lacks spiritual knowledge and is too attached to the members of his family, the elephant, being illusioned by the external energy of Krishna, had his wives and children bathe and drink the water. Indeed, he raised water from the lake with his trunk and sprayed it over them. He did not mind the hard labor involved in this endeavor. So there's the fantastic description of Gajendra in that position, lording it over material nature, or trying to lord it over matter. He controls the water to some degree, utilizes it for his pleasurable purpose, even if it is a nice act, so it gives him pleasure to be lifting the water and spraying it with his trunk at his children and wives. So this position, it can be contrasted with the position that the person takes when it's in accord with his actual makeup. It's a completely different position. That position is one where one is having a different approach. He's acting, and this is a continuation of Lord Krishna's definition of who the living entity is. So it's having that understanding is going to influence the actions. So this is Krishna's definition. Indestructible, transcendental living entity called Brahman, and his eternal nature called Adiyatma, the self. So a very different position if one has that, is holding that concept. So there's a different consciousness that then is going to fuel the actions if one holds that position. So that's spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness. And the position there is quite different. The position that's taken is to serve the Supreme Lord. I mean, it's a dramatically different position. So that position, you can even generalize, it's always taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no matter what the circumstance, what the situation. And it's not only taking the position of looking to the shelter of the Supreme Lord, but also looking to the shelter of his devotees. It extends. So, now, there's this fantastic illustration for this particular position, this position that's fueled by spiritual consciousness. And it's a story that is coming from Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So one day, there's a follower of Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, and he's begging alms under the boiling noon sun, like extremely hot. And it's during the month of April and May, which is supposed to be particularly scorching sun at that time of the year. So a person goes to Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj and he says, "Why is your servant begging in the hot sun? Everyone begs in the morning and they then return to their residences." So Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he responds to the man by telling him some words that come from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And these are the words, I'll read the Sanskrit and then the translation. And these are words that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur told all his followers. "Tumara sevaya dukha koya jatso seto parama sukha, seva sukha dukha parama sampada, nasaye avidya dukha. Troubles encountered in your service shall be the cause of great happiness. For in your devotional service, joy and sorrow are equally great riches. Both destroy the misery of ignorance." So, this is actually, these particular words of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur you can find in the Sharanagati prayers. So, this instruction highlights one important point, and that is that the taking of shelter, that position of taking shelter of the Supreme Master Sri Krishna and the devotees of the Lord, means that one is not rendering service to the Lord in order to achieve a comfortable material situation. So this is the crux of the matter. In fact, one could even say that if one has got that kind of end in mind, if one's coming supposedly to take shelter of Krishna or his devotee, supposedly, means the end is a comfortable material situation, one could say that one actually is failing to take shelter of the devotees and is failing to take shelter of Krishna. And broadly speaking, one can even say that that person is very much in material consciousness. So it's more in that first position. It means that the person is still very much, and not still, but is attracted to their own efforts to achieve their own idea of happiness. So, there's this very nice description, again by Uddhava, because he looks at this particular topic, and he gives some insight into the position of such a person who's supposedly coming take shelter of Krishna, supposedly coming to take shelter of the devotees, but looking for a comfortable material situation of some sort. And this is how the insight Uddhava gives into this. He says, in such a position, a sleeping person may see many objects of sense gratification in his dreams. weeds. But such things are merely creations of his mind and are thus of no benefit to him. Similarly, one who is asleep to his spiritual identity sees many sense objects in this world, but they are all creations of the Lord's illusory potency and have no permanent existence. One who meditates upon the temporary objects of the senses, therefore, uselessly engages his intelligence. So, it's a very graphic description of the person who's supposedly taking shelter of the Supreme Lord and the devotees, but is still in that position of material consciousness, or everything is fueled by material consciousness, including how the intelligence is utilized. So, now, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that when there's material intelligence, so that first position, and it is generally impelled by the senses. So the senses are the driving force. It's not the intelligence that's driving. The senses are driving the intelligence. And what the senses are wanting always is some sort of gratification, something that's going to be pleasurable to them. And that includes the mind, of course. So the useless usage of intelligence is meditating on those temporary objects. So that can be the nice house, the nice car. I mean, one can't imagine a person's coming to take shelter of Krishna and his devotees while meditating on those objects, but it can be even more subtle. It may be wishing a particular, a child, whatever it is, that meditation may be there. So, again, this is a completely contrasting position to those who've taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. And where the difference is, again, touches on how the intelligence is being utilized. Or the meditation. The intelligence is always fixed upon the Lord. And the reason for that is one is meditating on Krishna's form, one's meditating on his qualities, on his pastimes, even on his devotees. So, for this reason, the intelligence is never separated from the Absolute. And in terms of our discussion, that means that taking shelter, that position of taking shelter of the Lord, is also taking shelter of the intelligence of his devotees. And this is a very important point. So, connected to this, by virtue of the fact that Krishna creates the quality of knowledge, which is defined by that ability to distinguish spirit from matter. We have to accept a particularly intelligent statement of Srila Prabhupada in this purport. Because what he says is, we may invent so many ways to be happy or to counteract the dangers of this material world. But unless our attempts are sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they will never make us happy. So, so to tread that true path of happiness requires understanding one very simple truth, and this is where the difficulty comes in. And particularly for somebody who is going through the motions of supposedly taking shelter of Krishna or supposedly taking shelter of the devotees. And this is that. This is that understanding. And this was a text that my spiritual master drew my attention to very early on in Krishna consciousness. It's something coming from the Avanti Brahmana. He says, everyone considers something of this world to be very dear to him. Because of such attachment, one ultimately becomes morose. One who understands the simple truth should give up the false sense of possessiveness and thus tread the path of true happiness. So that's the huge thing that has to be put out of the way. I mean, it's a huge thing. That sense of possessiveness to what one holds as one's idea of happiness, something that is very dear to one. So you're not necessarily even giving up the object, but it's the sense of possessiveness. So, and that will permit one then to take that bend or that fork in the road that goes in the direction of taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna and his devotees. And again, that first kind of happiness, that happiness where one is under the control of the senses, intelligence is under the control of the senses, means that one is running after those limited, those ever-changing, those temporary material objects. And objects doesn't just refer to, you know, microphone, desk, car, house, even persons, relatives. That position, and this is the thing, you know, one comes to witness, it's actually a begging position. So not begging in the sense of, you know, the exalted follower of Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj doing his begging on behalf of his spiritual master. It's a begging position to be wanting those, that happiness that's lying in those changing, temporary persons, objects, but looking from a material perspective, fueled by material consciousness, puts one in a begging position. So the second kind of happiness, on the other hand, spiritual happiness, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that it can be experienced by pure devotees in an unlimited way. So it's ongoing. It's not like stops, starts, have to switch to look elsewhere. It's always the same lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and it's ongoing. Unlimited happiness. And the reason for that is because it's situated in goodness. And this is an idea that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur expresses if one looks in the Uddhava Gita. So the idea is that one wants to cultivate dependence on Lord Krishna, even dependence on his devotees in some sense. Looking always to the protection of his lotus feet. So that is actually, that splits in the road Gajendra took. He shifted to that side of looking to the protection of the lotus feet of Krishna. So he overcame that huge obstacle, that sense of possessiveness, which is the big obstruction. So, as Srila Prabhupada puts it, Gajendra was correct. So, his position of where he was going to look for his happiness now was the correct position. So, these are some thoughts on today's verse regarding Gajendra making his shift. So, if there's any thoughts to expand the discussion.
Thank you so much, Mataji. Actually, I really like what you're talking about the lecture, and I have a question especially regarding to this, because there's a difference between, I'm going to try and articulate the question. Like when Gajendra surrendered unto the Lord, Krishna is our worshipful Lord, even if he handles us roughly by his embrace, right? So actually, without the mercy of the Lord, we're completely powerless. And we actually serve the Lord because he is our shelter. And though there's a situation where, and I see it a lot, and I've seen it in my own devotional life, where a devotee will, there's a material situation, and the sense of surrender, they're still looking into the material world while surrendering, as if you can see that we're powerless in our situation, right? Yet, like, for instance, like a family situation, even we'll feel like we're wronged, right? So we'll say, well, I'm powerless, so then I'll surrender to the Lord, so he will fix this, right? And if he doesn't fix it, then it means, you know, I didn't do something right. So it's still like I'm in control, you know? We want to, like, it's just a particular devotee I've been speaking to. It's very much in this situation. And use the word morose, and it very accurately describes it. It's a morose situation because when the devotee is, ostensibly surrendering to the Lord, but it's as if I'm being wrong so much here, so I should surrender to the Lord, and the Lord will reciprocate. But then if the Lord doesn't reciprocate, it means I'm not loved, and you know what I'm saying? And I've seen this, I've seen it in myself in my past, and I think it's especially when people are really moving from kind of materially surrendering on kind of a quasi fruitive mentality to like real surrender. And that's a really difficult patch that I think a lot of devotees go through. And I wonder if you could shed like some light on this, like how to get through that. Because it seems that it only happens by the mercy of the Lord. So we do devotional service, and by such we do more, but is there something weak? You know what I'm saying? Is there a way to help it? Or, you know what I'm saying? I can't articulate it so well.
Jaini Tagora Hari, what you've expressed is questioning how it is, in some sense, when a person's in a position of attempting to surrender to Lord Krishna, but at the same time, they're looking at a particular material situation, and the particular material situation that they're looking at is one in which there's possibly a family situation, and there's a sense of having been wronged in that family situation. So there's the attempt being made to surrender to the Supreme Lord, but at the same time, there's looking to the Supreme Lord to provide that reciprocation, that love that perhaps was lacking in that situation. But still, there's the situation there. So the question is, it appears almost like a quasi-surrender because they're still looking to that situation for something. Okay, something like that? So as a person who has taken a step in the direction of attempting to fix their mind, their intelligence on Krishna, based on that understanding that, you know, one's self is that spirit soul, and that relationship with Krishna is the relationship that needs nurturing, that needs development, that needs greater understanding. One has taken the step that is moving one in the direction of spiritual happiness. Now, naturally, there is always reciprocation of Krishna in that relationship. At the times when one opens one's consciousness to that relationship. So that means at those moments when one has allowed the mind to be pushed into the background where it's involved meditating on something material, the distress caused by a family situation. At those times when that recedes into the background and one's loving relationship with Krishna's in the foreground, one genuinely throws oneself wholeheartedly into that relationship. One experiences the reciprocation of Krishna because he's responding accordingly. And what one experiences is the spiritual happiness. That happiness that's in the mode of goodness, it's very satisfying. Now, what to do when one knows that, okay, I'm engaged in that process of surrender, and here on the other side, I'm shackled. I'm shackled by some hurt that may be in one's emotions. There may be impressions in the mind that come from dealings that were more with material consciousness. So those dealings, because persons are on that side of the choice, they're on the road of material, everything's fueled by material consciousness. So the dealings tend to be painful. It doesn't matter if it's in a family situation, if it's in a broader situation. But here's a devotee carrying those impressions in the mind of some dealings that caused a lot of pain because there was material consciousness. So how is it that one is going to actually be able to focus even properly on that relationship with Krishna when one is carrying these impressions, when there are emotions that are hurt emotions, there may be sadness, there may be even a sense of being let down, there may be even anger. So those are very real because it's in the mind. It's very real. It's been carried in the subtle body. So now what one ideally would like is that one would be able to put it down. Now, the only way one can actually put down all of that is if Krishna, in that loving relationship with Krishna, he's exposed some particular facet. Some facet where, okay, this hurt exists in the mind, this impression exists in the mind. It becomes one's duty to examine that to some degree. So if it's very deep, one may need the assistance of a fellow devotee, the intelligence of a fellow devotee. They can actually give support in examining that particular area. It may be a devotee, perhaps, if it's very deep and traumatic impression, it may even require a devotee who has special skills in that area. So they have the skills of knowing how to go into that space in a way that's not traumatizing. So one then looks at that with the help of a devotee and a devotee's good intelligence. It may be possible that it can actually be resolved in a relatively simple way just through slowly speaking about it, verbalizing it, hearing a devotee's understanding from a Krishna conscious perspective. It then a shift happens internally in that mental body just through the thing of verbalizing, maybe examining, depending on how traumatic it is, one may only be able to examine a little bit at a time. And that's fine. Whatever Krishna has revealed at a certain time where it's come to your attention, oh, this is there, then one can look at it, but with help, preferably, because these things have left some sort of big impression. And then after that examination, as much as one is able to, as much as Krishna has revealed, one may be able to then go through the necessary angry thoughts, sad thoughts, even understand how one views that relationship with those family members from the present tense, or even how one viewed it as a child or as a teenager. So one has to process it. It's necessary to process, because the reason things are being carried is because they didn't get properly processed. So one processes it, and then one can put it down. It requires the processing. And sometimes, like there's lots of books written internally. I mean, just because there's been the change of body, there was one time when one was a child, one time when one was a teenager. It means that one had a particular consciousness at that time, a particular way of looking at the world at that time. So in some sense, one also has to address that entity that one's carrying on the subtle level, that child that was oneself at a certain time, that teenager that was oneself at a certain time. And show kindness, caring towards that entity at that time that perhaps didn't get it, what was needed. Now one is the adult. One can provide that to that young child, that young teenager that one's carrying internally. So a lot of it can be achieved with support. Sometimes one can even get various books that look at these things, and one can read, and it sort of allows one to get better insight into some of those difficulties, that traumatic thing that one's carrying. But if Krishna's revealed, attempt to process it, then one can put it down. Then, and at the same time, of course, one's constantly carrying on, you know, one's activities for nurturing one's relationship with Krishna. So at times one has a heavy heart, but one carries through all the time knowing that it's a progressive relationship. And one attends to what needs to be attended to dutifully. But always one has the protection, the shelter of Krishna. So anything one does, because it's under the protection of Krishna, it's glorious. It's not a poor person who's going to be 20 years in therapy and, you know, perhaps at the end of it, there's a little glimmer of light. It's nothing like that. Krishna arranges. It's very specific. There's a beginning point, end point, complete, put down, move on. It's, one doesn't have to carry it for a very long time. By Krishna's beautiful arrangement, the fact that one's a transcendental living entity, the relationships of a transcendental nature, it's very time specific, very specific, one thing that needs to be looked at, tend to it, carry on with one's relationship with Krishna, or keep carrying on. So there's some thoughts on that particular point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your class. And as Jitendra always says, thank you for putting so much effort into it. My question is related to, in this purport, Prabhupada mentions car accidents. We could die at any moment. But we could see that, I guess, greatest realizations or advancement anyone can make is like the jantra. If somebody has cancer, it's not like a car accident, boom, you know, you're not even thinking about anything. But when you're going through cancer or some terminal disease, like the jantra was in a crocodile for, 1,000 years. So, and I kind of realized, when I never heard of anybody on their deathbed who holds grudges, really. They're not thinking about that, you know what that jerk did to me, you know, last week? They're not thinking about that. And the only thing that maybe doesn't go away on the deathbed is lust. I'm not sure if you've heard that story of Prabhupada. He's told the story of a king who brought his beautiful daughter in the room of a terminally ill old man. then all men was like, said something like, you know, oh, she's cute. So that's the only thing that doesn't go away in our deathbed. But my question is basically, essentially, is that how can we keep these things in perspective of that when we hold grudges, when we're envious, somebody's getting more respect, all this, you know, things we hold dear to our heart, you know, if we're on our deathbed like a Jindra, it's like it doesn't mean anything. But while we're healthy and, you know, strong, then all these things have some type of meaning. So how do we keep these things in perspective that we're actually in a crocodile of, you know, some terminal illness, but it doesn't appear like that because that's how powerful Maya is. So how do we keep this mentality in perspective, which can prevent us from, you know, degrading our spiritual life due to, you know, Vaishnava Parada, Nama Parada, and Samya Parada. So what are some methods we could do to keep this in mind, that this crocodile of, you know, terminal illness, I could die at any moment, but we don't see it. So share some light on that.
Let me see if I understood. Jai Baladevi, you were asking if somebody has something that's not so sudden possible cause of death, but a more long drawn out thing like cancer, and you know, is facing death, then how to actually look at maybe carrying to one's deathbed a grudge. So you've taken it for granted, lust may still be there, but at least a grudge, not carrying a grudge to one's deathbed. And even if one's in a position where death is close, if not immediate, but there's a time limit because it may be a disease such as cancer. Okay, so the issue is a grudge, an impending death. Well, whatever the condition of the body, because that isn't actually oneself, the self is that part that is transcendental to the body. The body is, you know, the external covering is going to be sloughed off, just like skin is sloughed off with washing. It's going to be sloughed off. So one focuses on the permanent. So the permanent is the relationship that gives one happiness. So one may be in a diseased body, but internally one may be experiencing great spiritual happiness. And that spiritual happiness is from the meditation on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So now, if in the heart there's the problem of grudge, some kind of displeasure, some kind of sense of having been wronged by somebody. So one's time is short in terms of that the material body is going to be left soon and the subtle body is going to be traveling with the soul. So ideally one would like to clean up the subtle body. And of course everything done in relationship with Krishna is automatically cleansing, even without effort. But let's say one is actually conscious that, okay, this needs some attention, just like the other thought of attending to hurt, but here you're attending to a grudge. So one has to give it attention. One has to acknowledge, okay, I'm aware. Oh, I have a grudge. Oh, and the grudge is against person X. Oh, I see the picture of person X. In fact, actually, I'm meditating on person X with anger, with displeasure. In fact, person X is coming to my mind constantly. It's actually interrupting my meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna. So one could, just much like you do very many times in class, look up every single verse can find on humility and read it over and over again, lying on one's deathbed in some sickly body, doesn't matter. One has the capacity to actually absorb those messages. So read and meditate on those messages of humility. That one is actually not concerned with honor or dishonor. It's irrelevant to one. Doesn't matter. What's actually of concern to one is that one is honoring the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the personal honor and dishonor, what does it matter? What does it matter? One is only concerned with honoring the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I would say find every single verse that deals with honor and dishonor, any great personality that has written on the topic of honor and dishonor, and read and meditate on it. So that, because actually one receives the blessings of that great personality who's spoken on that topic and has had realizations on that topic. So one tries to get into the mood of that personality. So it will take one's meditation away from, you know, something fueled by material consciousness. When you read the spiritual consciousness, those who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna and how they dealt with that topic. So, and honor and dishonor, that one is dealt with a lot in the scriptures. So just look up everything. And those that appeal to one, just read and meditate on it constantly. Then you're switching your consciousness. Okay. Due to time, we'll end. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.